Yes, sir. Good morning. May it please the court. We are here today, I'm Brewster Rawls on behalf of Maryview Hospital, and we're here today on a narrow issue of Virginia law as applied by the district court in this trial, which occurred in December of 2009. The basic facts of this case, Your Honor, is that Ms. Creekmore delivered a child February 25, 2005. The allegations against Maryview Hospital are that its nurses failed to properly observe Ms. Creekmore and to report her condition to the physicians involved. Prior to the trial, the other defendant, the United States, which had the obstetrics doctor, settled out of the case, and the case went to trial against the nurses at Maryview solely on the issues. It's basically a Virginia state law malpractice. Your Honor, we believe that the district court committed error, plainly, by permitting I think that was within the discretion of the trial court, Your Honor, to do so. A motion to remand was made shortly before the trial, which the district court rejected. I think at that stage, it was about 3 weeks before trial.
Okay.
No, sir. There was none. They had, Your Honor, shortly before the trial. That is correct.
So you had a case here where there was an absence of diversity, and were there any federal question in that case?
Not as it went to trial, Your Honor. It was a pure state law case.
No federal question in the case, no diversity. The United States dropped out. What made it a reasonable exercise of discretion?
Your Honor, I have not prepared for that argument, but my understanding of it is that the United States, the court, in the interest of judicial economy, may keep the case under such circumstances. It's discretionary. I can say that in my... Yes, sir. Yes. Yes.
Did you make findings on it? Judicial economy and fairness.
I believe in fairness to the district court that he did, Your Honor. I think that is there. That is in the record if we go back and look at it. But the issue was raised by counsel for Ms. Creekmore of wanting to remand the case back to state court, which would have been the circuit court in the city of court.
So you got a state question here, and that would be always done. This is the kind of thing that we certified in the court question here.
It certainly could be, Your Honor. It is a pure question of Virginia law. It is a question dealing with the issue of whether or not a physician may offer standard of care testimony with regard to nurses. The operative statute...
Why is it necessarily a question of federal law? Why is it a question of federal rules of evidence? Is it going to keep the case in federal court? Is it possible that federal rules would apply here, and is it just a question of the weight of the evidence and the relevance of it? I mean, federal rules wouldn't... The federal rules of evidence wouldn't block the admission of testimony because what the what I don't know, I there's certainly no privilege that would keep it out, and it would probably be just sort of a run of the mill question under Rule 401 as to how relevant it is. And the physician who's giving who was giving testimony was certainly aware of the procedures that nurses followed, and then to the extent that you thought that his testimony should be discounted because he was a physician and not himself a nurse, you could have attacked that on cross-examination, and then it would go to the weight of the evidence rather than to the admissibility. I don't think that a normal federal judge would ordinarily let that kind of thing in and just let the jury assign what weight to it they wish. And I don't understand why, you know, a categorical exclusion under supposed categorical exclusion of evidence under Virginia law would trump federal rules of evidence and bar the admission of what seems to me to be relevant testimony.
May I address that point, Your Honor? In the D'Antonio versus Northampton Accomack Hospital case, which was before this court a good many years ago, it addressed the issue of the applicability of certain provisions of the Virginia Medical Malpractice Act, of which 8.01, 581.20, governing experts, is part of. The specific issue in the D'Antonio case dealt with the provisions of a malpractice review panel and the admissibility of that. And this court found then that the issues of the malpractice panel and its admissibility and such were so intimately involved in the purposes of the Virginia Malpractice Act that it amounted to substantive law in Virginia. I'd likewise point the court's attention to Judge Kaiser's decision in the Peck case, decided where he came to essentially the same conclusion, where he came to the conclusion specifically that Virginia Code Section 8.01, 581.20, which deals specifically with the qualifications of expert witnesses and who may offer standard of care opinions and who may not, was substantive law in...
Well, wouldn't that have argued in terms of an error case?
It certainly could, Your Honor.
Let's assume that it was an error to admit Dr. Chester.
Yes, sir.
There was no motion for a direct verdict from the judge in the case in chief complaint. We put the nurse up to the vote. She was qualified. She gave an opinion.
Yes.
One which the judge relied on. What difference is that that Dr. Stokes' testimony was offered? Because in the end, the nurse and the doctor's testimony almost came the same thing.
Your Honor, Judge Floyd, I would point out to you that the district court expressly declined to keep the evidence open as requested by the plaintiff at trial in light of the scheduling issues with Nurse Raya. I would also point out that at the point in the testimony of Ms. Raya, when called as a rebuttal witness, an objection was made at that time to her testimony going beyond the scope of the defendant's case, to which the district court simply found, well, you had somebody who talked about the standard of care, therefore she can. The point is that in making its case in chief, the plaintiff in this case, Ms. Creekmore, had no competent evidence upon which the finder of fact, which in this case was without a jury, was the judge, could find that the nurses at Maryview breached the standard of care. And the judge expressly declined to keep the evidence open. He expressly declined to delay the trial, to take anything out of order. That's very clear in the record that that was the case. So if we look at this situation, Your Honor, quite simply, the plaintiff never proved a prima facie case, because if we get to the issue of could Dr. Stokes provide the testimony that he was requested to provide, and you look at the applicable Virginia Supreme Court cases involved.
Did you make that question on his
I don't believe that I did, Your Honor, in all fairness. We did argue it at the end of the case in this bench trial. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, district judges do this all the time in this trial. Take the evidence, don't make any decision for all the evidence. Is there something wrong with that?
There is nothing wrong with it, Your Honor, if perhaps the district court had expressly chosen to do that, but the district court expressly chose not to do that, which is a prejudice to the defendants in this case, as essentially the plaintiff can come along and put on their evidence after the fact, after our evidence has been put on. The fact that a bench trial, that the trier of fact is also the judge, I don't think obviates the need for the proper ordering of evidence and for the parties to prove prima facie cases.
It really is different from the jury trial where the other cases are all there. You have a judge. The case is about to proceed. The judge says, no, I'm not going to continue it, but you can bring in your witness. And there's some question as to whether he's meaning you can bring in your witness out of order or when. And there's some question under Virginia law as to how you can treat rebuttal witnesses. There seems to be some question if you don't make that motion to dismiss something, there might be a problem there in terms of receiving additional evidence and that sort of thing. But I think the point being here is the nurse did testify, and ultimately her testimony was substantially the same as the doctor's testimony.
You know, that is correct, Your Honor, but I would point out to the court's attention that the district court made it very clear on numerous points in this that it was not simply holding it all open, putting some of it aside, taking the evidence out of order. It was making the point that it was taking it in the plaintiff, that this was the plaintiff's case in chief.
I'm with you, but this is a bench trial.
Yes, sir.
And that seems to be really material to dealing with a jury, but as a judge. And if he does it, it kind of looked like that's what he did. It's it was sort of assuming that he doesn't know what he's doing by receiving this evidence.
Your Honor, I don't think it's an issue of the district judge not knowing what he was doing. I think it is a...
I'm not going to receive this for this purpose.
And I will point out that when Ms. Raya testified, and that she was asked the broad question, did he comply with the standard of care? My partner at the time, Ms. Stark, raised the objection. The court said no, and we went on there.
Did you make an objection to Dr. Stokes' testimony?
Yes, sir. Absolutely, I did. We objected. The record is there, Your Honor. We objected, Your Honor. We offered no objection to Dr. Stokes with regard to the issues of causation. He's a medical doctor, fair enough. We quite expressly objected to Dr. Stokes offering standard of care opinions for nurses on the basis that, in fact, he was not qualified to do so under the applicable provision.
Why was he not qualified? Was the only reason he was not qualified was he was a physician, and he was a physician or just per se under Virginia law qualified to testify to the standard of care of nurses, or was he not qualified because lack of qualifications go to physicians generally, or did the lack of Dr. Stokes' qualifications go to the fact that he just was not familiar personally with the nurses' practices?
Your Honor, under Virginia Code Section 8.01, 581.0, there are two requirements which the Virginia Supreme Court has repeatedly recognized. First, a physician must have a knowledge requirement. We're not arguing that Dr. Stokes didn't have that knowledge requirement.
He was knowledgeable enough about what the nurse's standard of care was.
Yes, sir. But there is also an active clinical practice provision of that which the Supreme Court of Virginia has repeatedly recognized, which Dr. Stokes clearly did not meet the standards for. It is the actual performance of the procedure at issue, and the issue here, Your Honors, is the matter of nurses advising doctors of the status of a patient. And quite simply, Dr. Stokes never stood in that shoe, Your Honor.
Well, I recall somewhere, Dunstan Patients, at the beginning of this, you had a doctor, and you wanted that doctor to testify about what the nurse's standard was?
Judge Wynn, I note my time is up. Would you like me to address this now or in rebuttal?
Yes. I want you to address it.
Yes, sir. Dr. Amma was dead.
I want to know, did you have a doctor asked that very same thing? Thought I want to testify as a nurse in the court.
Following the ruling of the court with regard to Dr. Stokes, yes, sir. We had Dr. Amit, and we did have him offer such testimony. That is correct. We're not.
So, is your view that you had no other choice once Dr. Stokes' testimony was admitted?
Essentially, sir, yes. And we'd made it very clear.
You didn't ask first.
No, sir. It was only after. No, sir. It was Judge Stokes, Dr. Stokes was put on. We objected to him offering the testimony. When Dr. Amit was put on, we did offer him for that testimony sequentially.
And he let both physicians testify.
Yes, sir, he did.
Did you put up a nurse testifies to the standard?
Yes, sir, we did. We absolutely did. Ms. Witcher. I
couldn't remember my notes.
Good afternoon,
Ms. Crump. We're happy to hear from you.
Thank you. My name is Kim Crump, and I represent the appellee, Akasha Creekmore. issue in this case solely is whether or not the trial court erred by allowing Dr. Stokes to testify. A trial court's decision to allow an expert to testify will not be reversed unless it is clear that he's not qualified to testify.
What about the provision that your opponent cites of Virginia malpractice law and combined with the decision of the court saying that because malpractice law implicates special and important state interests, that those malpractice evidentiary rules is something that we need to follow. How about those cases, that Accomack County hospital case that he cited from this court?
Your Honor, I would submit to the court that the Virginia statute that I believe counsel is alluding to gives you the two prongs, and that is the expert has to have the knowledge aspect and also has to have the active clinical practice. And the case that I cited, Jackson versus Freshie, is the case on point, which explains what that means. When you're looking at the active clinical practice, you're really looking at the procedure at issue. You're not looking at the title of a person, whether it's a nurse, doctor, anesthesiologist, et cetera, but you're looking at whether or not they perform the actual procedure in issue. In this case, we're looking at monitoring vitals, such as blood pressure, pulse, assessing whether there are signs of shock, like decreased blood pressure, increased pulse, decreased urine output, checking the patient's
fundus. And he did all those things.
Dr. Stokes did all those things, and he testified repeatedly. Doctors and nurses check blood pressures the same way. They monitor blood pressures the same way. They appreciate the difference as far as whether...
So is the Virginia malpractice statute is not written in such a way that doctors can never testify as to nursing practices. The Virginia statute is written in terms of an active clinical practice that is, as an overall matter, familiar with the procedures at issue.
Yes, sir. And it's looked at on a case-by-case basis. And really the actual issue is whether or not the expert who is testifying is familiar with the procedures at issue. In this case, we have a doctor who does blood pressures just like nurses, who monitors blood pressures just like nurses, who will check a uterus, incision, fundus for bleeding just like nurses, who understands what it means when a patient is born into shock just like nurses. So you have the actual procedure at issue in this case the same for nurses and doctors. And there is no evidence in the case that it was
so
different.
So his status as a physician, in your judgment, went to weight rather than admissibility?
It may go to weight, Your Honor, but I would submit that really, in this case, there was no difference. Judge Morgan questioned the doctor several times when he talked about mean arterial pressures. He said, the nurses look at those numbers just like doctors. And Dr. Stokes said, yes. When you look at the essential issue with regards to this patient, we're looking at the issue of what were the signs of danger that this woman was going towards shock, and what were the signs that this woman could be losing blood. And we would submit to the court that those are the issues. Those are the medical procedures at issue. The nurses at Maryview failed to recognize the danger zones, which showed this woman was going into shock, which showed that she was bleeding profusely.
Well, is there a conceptual issue here? He didn't perform, or he hasn't performed those tasks in the same context as nurse. As nurse.
Your Honor, I would submit that the issue deals with whether or not he performs the relevant medical procedure at issue. And in this particular case, an OB doctor, just like a nurse, would be able to appreciate the vital signs, the changes in the vital signs, in the same circumstance. He would also be in a position to assess her uterus, incision site, fundus, to determine whether there's bleeding. In addition, he would be able to monitor the patient and be able to appreciate the signs of impending shock. So I would submit to the court there would be no difference in the way a doctor would do this as opposed to a nurse.
The I think it was Judge Wynn asked about Dr. Ahmed's testimony later on. Was that offered only after Dr. Stokes had testified, or was Dr. Ahmed put on a witness list pre-trial or whatever? Normally, you have a witness list pre-trial that you say about the witnesses you're going to anticipate. Was Dr. Ahmed's testimony offered only after Dr. Stokes' testimony was admitted?
His testimony was offered prior. As a matter of fact, in pre-trial disclosures for the experts, which is on Appendix 39.
He listed as an expert?
He was listed as an expert, and specifically he was listed to offer standard of care opinions, and he would testify that Maryview Hospital and its employees complied with the standard of care, and that specifically referenced the nurses. That was in the expert.
Offered provisionally, or was it just offered?
It was offered as, in my reading of it, that he was going to be giving standard of care opinions with regards to.
So you, what you're saying is that both of you had your expert witnesses who were going to testify as to the nurse's standard of care, and both expert witnesses were physicians.
Yes, sir.
And that was made clear at the beginning of the trial.
Yes, sir. And I would also add that Dr. Ahmed, in his opinion, which is attached, went into extensive detail about his opinion regarding the standard of care that Maryview Nurse provided, and indicated
that. Does the listing of Dr. Ahmed as an expert witness in the expert witness register prior to trial amount to a waiver of sort of objections to Dr. Stokes if you offer your own witness of the same type that the one you're objecting to? Is that it? What's the legal effect of that? Is it a waiver, or is it invited error, or is it, what is it?
I would submit it as waiver, Your Honor, and that's my second issue.
You waive your objection if you're doing the same thing?
I would submit that Maryview waived the objection to having a doctor testify on the standard of care in light of the fact that in their pretrial disclosures, they indicated Dr. Ahmed was being called to testify regarding the nursing standard of care, and furthermore, that he would be called to rebut testimony.
Seemed to indicate to us that he almost, in response to a question that Judge Wynn asked, that he really was almost forced to. By the fact that Dr.
Stokes testified. Well, Your Honor, if the court will allow, I actually presented this motion in a pretrial motion. So when it came up during trial,
that you had witnessed, you then moved to strike his doctor as saying that he can't testify about the nurse and the court denies your motion. So he's the one moving to get his doctor to talk about the nurse at that junction, and then it flips and the nurse can't come. Boy, it really is an interesting aspect of this case. I don't think I've seen anything like
that. It is interesting, but I would proffer to the court that out of an abundance of caution to get a ruling beforehand, counsel raised the issue.
On the same basis that he was objecting?
I was actually raising the issue to see how the court would rule, so that since we both had designations by physicians about the nursing standard of care, it was my position that we needed to resolve that issue to see where we stood. And Maryview, and the court denied my motion, and Maryview never raised it as an issue in a pretrial motion and did not indicate that they objected to a doctor testifying on the nursing standard of care.
Well, maybe what I'm trying to get at is, in order, I don't really want to do violence to the Virginia malpractice team, but maybe one way to get at it is is simply to say, well, okay, but the parties were kind of a parity here, and there was no prejudice to either party when they were each operating expert witnesses who were physicians, and each put on expert witnesses who were physicians. Maybe that's one way to get at it. What do you think?
I think that is a situation. We both offered physicians as well as nurses. In a particular case,
was there testimony by nurses as well as for the nursing standard of care?
Yes, sir. The plaintiff,
you had additional evidence, and you had evidence in addition to Dr. Stokes.
Yes, sir. And we also had, given our disclosure of a nurse testifying on the standard of care, the only wrinkle occurred was she wouldn't be available until the 11th. And Judge Morgan,
did she actually testify?
She did. She actually testified and said essentially the same thing that Dr. Stokes testified to during case in chief.
So are you saying that Dr. Stokes' testimony was cumulative?
It was the same as the nurses. And that,
for one thing, under rule federal, we review a federal civil trial under rule federal rule procedure 61. We're not supposed to reverse the judgment on finder of fact unless the substantial rights of the party have been affected. Given the fact that there was additional testimony, given the fact that both sides were offering testimony or position. I'm trying to think of a way to resolve this matter without damage to the Virginia malpractice team. So I'm coming around with questions of waiver and substantial rights. That kind of thing.
One of the problems with Dr. Stokes' testimony in their objections is, as to meet that definition, active clinical practice. He didn't actively monitor and check on high-risk patients by treatment to know when to call them.
I believe it's the phraseology that you have to look at, because the issue is not, as far as an expert testifying, the issue is not calling the doctor. The issue is the actual medical procedure at issue, and the expert testimony would be, when would a nurse be on notice that the patient is in danger, which goes back to monitoring and appreciating the significance of the vital signs, increased pulse, decreased blood pressure, decreased urine output. That's the kind of expert testimony that I believe is an issue, not whether or not Dr. Stokes would be in a position to call. The question is, at what point would a reasonable nurse have known that this patient is in danger? And Dr. Stokes stood in the same position as a nurse, and knowing that if a patient has increased pulse, decreased blood pressure, decreased urine output, that's a sign that, one, they're potentially bleeding, especially in a case of a lady who has pregnancy-induced hypertension, who's at risk for bleeding.
You say that knowledge by the doctor needs to act on the
Well, he testified that doctors check the uterus, fundus, incision the same way that nurses do. Doctors monitor blood pressures, pulses, urine output the same way that nurses do. Doctors understand and monitor for signs of impending shock the same way that nurses do.
Suppose
there is no difference.
Just as a matter of causation here, suppose the nurses had talked to a physician at an earlier stage. Let's assume that there's a breach of the duty, a breach of the standard of care, a breach of the duty of care. Suppose the nurses had talked to the physician at an earlier stage in this unfortunate matter. What would it, in your view, would the physician have done that could have headed off this misfortune?
As Dr. Schmidt, may I respond?
Sure.
As Dr. Stokes testified, the doctors could have immediately started a transfusion, could have immediately started giving her fluids so there would be more volume so that her heart could pump blood to the vital organs. And those
But the
things,
nurses have done that themselves?
The nurses couldn't have, but they could have alerted the doctor.
But they could not do that themselves.
They could not. But if they appreciated the signs of danger at an earlier point in this case, which was crucial, somewhere between midnight and 2 a.m., they could have called on a doctor to order transfusion. And in this case, they did put in fluids. The nurse can, and they did, but they did it too late, because they did not recognize the signs that this woman was bleeding. And I would just like to point out, one of the salient things is there's unrebutted testimony by Mr. Whit Johnson that when he was awakened, moments to them taking her out of the room, blood was everywhere. She lost half her volume of blood. And I would submit to the court, that kind of neglect really didn't really require an expert, because she hadn't been monitored. She nearly bled to death, and Judge Morgan mentioned that that testimony went unrebutted.
Well, this was late in the evening, and I suppose nobody particularly wants to work the midnight to 8 o'clock shift. Are there fewer nurses on duty at this time of the night than there would be at 2 or 3 in the afternoon?
Well, Your Honor, I would submit I can't really answer that. You know, I imagine there probably may be, but in this particular case, Ms. Sutcliffe was Ms. Creekmore's only nurse, and the blood pressure monitoring was automatically cycling the vitals every 10 minutes. So there was, in this particular instance, no reason why she had been paying attention. She couldn't have noticed this woman started first having high-end blood pressure, and then around midnight, started going in the direction of having lowering blood pressure and increased pulse rate.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask my colleagues if they have further questions.
And I would ask the court if you would affirm the decision of the district.
Thank you. Mr. Rawls, we'd like to hear from you in rebuttal.
Sure. With regard to the issue of Dr. Amott's designation, in the standard pretrial scheduling, Dr. Stokes was designated by the plaintiff and offered standard of care opinions. When we designated 30 days later, we offered Dr. Amott also likewise in rebuttal testimony and rebuttal to Dr. Stokes for the issue of the standard of care. Now, when plaintiff raised the issue, essentially making the very same argument that I am making here before the trial, that Dr. Amott could not testify about the standard of care for nurses, citing the same case, among others, Sammy versus Barn, that physicians do not perform the same procedures as the nurses, standards for performance. This is the same argument that the plaintiff made at the time. In our response to that, we made it very clear, and this is page 76 of the appendix, although Maryview does not concede that Dr. Stokes should be allowed to offer any standard of care opinions against Maryview, should this court permit the plaintiff to elicit such testimony from Dr. Stokes, Maryview simply asked that this court also allow testimony from Dr. Amott.
Let me ask you two questions. The first is, the Virginia malpractice standard is not phrased in terms of physicians can't ever testify as to the activities of nurses, right?
It is not, Your Honor.
Okay, it's not. It's not phrased in that categorical fashion.
No, sir.
It talks about you have to have an active clinical practice.
That is correct.
Okay, now, wouldn't a district judge or a prior fact be given some latitude on an evidentiary question and on a definition of an active clinical practice, given that there's no categorical bar to physicians testifying about a nurse's standard of care? If he was familiar with the test performed by a nurse, if he had actually performed some of those tests himself, he obviously had staff privileges at a hospital, and he would know when nurses would come to him when there was a failure of vital signs. Was it permissible reading of the statute and within the discretion of the prior fact to have admitted that evidence within a statutory phrase which seems to have some looseness to it?
My short answer to that, Your Honor, is absolutely not. And if you look at the express language of the statute, active clinical practice within 1 year, and then we turn our attention to how the Virginia Supreme Court has interpreted this statute, and I direct the court's attention to the case of Hinckley versus Kohler. In that case, Your Honor, it actually dealt with OB issues like this, and the expert was proffered there who had 30 years experience as an OB. He consulted on OBs, on OB cases. He had been in the room countless times, but somewhat more about 2 years before the case in question, he had actually stopped being hands-on delivering babies, even though he still consulted about it, he still understood it, he still taught it. And in that case, the Virginia Supreme Court looked at that situation and ruled that the trial court had abused its discretion.
Okay, but that's a two-year lapse. Now, has there been anything comparable to a two-year lapse in terms of the Dr. Stokes's performance of the blood pressure checks and uterine checks and dealing with nurses? Has there been any kind of lapse?
There was no. Dr. Stokes had an active clinical practice as an OB at the time, right?
So it doesn't. If he continued his active clinical practice, doesn't that distinguish it from the case where there was a 2 year lapse?
No, sir, Your Honor, it does not, because Dr. Greenhouse in the Hinckley case also was involved in the monitoring and treatment of patients. As one of you pointed out in Ms. Crump's argument, the issue is here is whether the expert has performed the medical procedure at issue in the same context. Plainly, Dr. Stokes has never, just as Dr. Greenhouse was excluded there, and this is several steps removed from the OB Dr. Greenhouse and the OB versus the nurses with regard to Dr. Stokes. He was several steps removed from all that. It has to be in the same context. If we look at these jurisprudence in Virginia, the Lloyd versus Kahn, the Purdue case, the Sammy case, the Wright case.
Okay. I see where you're going with it. Let me ask you another question. Your opposing counsel indicated that there was nursing testimony, which was largely on behalf of plaintiffs, which was largely a duplicative of what Dr. Stokes himself had testified. I want to give you a chance to respond to that. Was it the testimony of a nursing expert, or was it an expert witness or a lay witness or what?
As pointed out, Your Honor, the plaintiff, as a rebuttal witness, called a Ms. Raya, who was a nursing expert. He was a nurse qualifying as an expert witness. But that was called in the plaintiff's rebuttal case. In the plaintiff's case in chief, there was no nursing testimony whatsoever criticizing, commenting upon the care provided by the nurses at Maryview.
Does it matter in a bench trial?
I believe that it does, Your Honor. I think the order...
I mean, both of my colleagues have questioned whether the order and sequencing of proof really makes the same kind of difference in a bench trial as it does in a jury trial.
You know, Your Honor, I think the district court could have decided to keep that evidence open, could have decided to do that, but it expressly went down the path of saying this is rebuttal evidence, you have rested your case, plaintiff, that's that. That's the path that it went down, and it was very express in that.
Well, I understood you to say that Dr. Stokes testified as causation without objection.
Yes, sir. So he qualified as
qualified. He testified as causation. How about the argument if the room was in such a mess, it would just be logical that the person would bleeding, and obviously the nurse wasn't watching.
Well, first of all, Your Honor, this today is the first argument that has ever been made in this case through its long history that it's a case that didn't require expert testimony. First time today. Never been made in the briefs, the lower court. Second of all, Your Honor, the Supreme Court of Virginia has recognized that certain circumstances, expert testimony may not be needed. The Beverly case, feeding a hot dog to somebody. The recognition of DIC, disseminated intravascular coagulopathy, I submit, Your Honor, it defies common sense to say that it doesn't require a medical expert to talk about it. I see my time is up.
Both of you got to offer your medical experts, and they were essentially on a parity, and since they were both physicians and the like. Can we really say that the substantial, we're not supposed to reverse these sorts of verdicts unless under Rule 61, a substantial right party has been affected. Were your substantial rights affected and affected in light of the fact that you got to offer your own expert and who was in roughly the same status as Dr. Stokes?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Maryview Hospital had no burden of proof in this matter. Every burden of proof was upon the plaintiff, and in their case in chief, they didn't prove their case.
I don't think the district court ever shifted the burden of proof on you.
No, sir, but the fact that I had that opportunity doesn't change the fact that the plaintiff always maintains the burden of proof in this, and quite simply, they did not meet their burden.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll